Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Justin Wolfers. Justin is Associate Professor of Business and Public Policy at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School. This year, he is a regular contributor to the Wall Street Journal, writing a column called Political Exchange, which looks at the US presidential election through the lens of prediction markets. And prediction markets are what we discussed in this interview. We met at the American Economic Association's annual meetings in New Orleans in January 2008, some months before the Democratic Party's candidate had been chosen and Hillary Clinton was still very much in the race. I began by asking him to introduce us to the idea of prediction markets.
Two ways of thinking about prediction markets. One is, if you come from a financial background, it's a new kind of financial derivative, if you like. It's a contract, for instance, that pays $100 if, say, Hillary Clinton is the next president. So it's a binary option, and these things trade in a financial market. The other way of thinking about it, a way that's more attractive to Australians and I think many Britons, but you think about it as a betting market. For many years, you've been able to walk into a corner betting shop in Britain and bet on who will be the next US president. And the odds there might also tell you something. So the formal market, nothing very different than what we're used to thinking about. The real key insight is just that something we'd always regarded as a byproduct of markets, being the price, we now think of as importantly valuable. You know, our friends in finance always thought that markets are about redistributing risk, or product markets are about allocating goods. But now we think the price is itself really useful. It summarizes a lot of information and potentially can be useful for firms, policymakers, individuals.
So where do they start off? Where do they come from, these prediction markets?
I guess you could say that early gambling was the first set of prediction markets, and you walk to a racetrack and people are trying to predict who is going to win a particular race. The use of predictions or those prices or odds as being an economically useful input to decision making, I think is, many people say it's much more recent. A starting point is 1988, University of Iowa started their electronic market on who would win the presidential election. It turns out the idea of betting on politics is much older than that. Coleman Strumpf and Paul Rode, two wonderful economists, have done some really nice historical work documenting the existence of betting on US elections back into the 19th century. And it occurred literally on the curb of Wall Street. If you go back and read the New York Times covering, say, the 1916 election, there's no discussion on the front page of the Times about who's up or down in the polls. Polls hadn't been invented. But there is discussion about who's up or down in the betting market or the prediction market. But in some sense, it's all back to the future. That's what we're starting to see again now. Over the recent election cycle, there's a lot more attention being given to prediction markets. Just that's in the political domain. And I think there's been a burst of intellectual energy by a bunch of researchers that's also led to moving beyond this political idea to firms starting to implement prediction markets. To help them assess any of the number of things that they may need to forecast.
So give me an example. How would a firm use a market like this?
So a firm I'm working with right now, Google. Okay. Google runs markets inside the firm. So you and I can't trade in their market, but Google employees can. And there might be a particular business interest that they have, that they have an interest in forecasting. How many people will use a particular product? Will a particular new software project be ready on time? A lot of people within the organization know something about that, and so the firm has what we would call an information aggregation problem, how to scoop up all that information and make sense of it. One way would be, and the way most corporations do it, is to have this thing we call a staff meeting, and everyone says what they know, and at the end we have the consensus, probably that none of us believe, but that's, we've aggregated information. The other would be to have everyone trade on it. And again, the price in a prediction market that pays a dollar if Google's next product launches on time will tell us the probability that Google's next product launches on time. In a corporation, that can be tremendously useful. The boss may come around to you and say, will you be ready on time? And what do you say? You almost always say yes. In a prediction market, if you can trade anonymously and you have incentives to tell the truth, the boss may learn some information that he may not have been able to get out otherwise.
So essentially the idea is that rather than asking people what they believe, who they might vote for in an election or what they believe is going to happen within their organisation,
you're asking them to put their money where their mouth is. It's kind of the classic economist response of going for revealed preference rather than stated preference.
Absolutely. So I think you are right to say that it has an intellectual heritage in thinking of surveys or polls when we ask people what they think. Put your money where your mouth is leads to truthful information revelation, and so we think that's a useful thing. The other thing that's very useful about markets is they provide a way of weighting different opinions. In a survey, we usually just take the average in the population. The nice thing about when I tend to trade or bet, I bet more on things I'm more certain about. So there's an intrapersonal weighting. I speak more loudly when I have more information, and that's something that a market really allows me to do and facilitates.
So what's the evidence on how prediction markets perform compared with polls or just asking people having a staff meeting?
Yeah, I think you ask exactly the right question. I want to pause on the question for a moment. Too often people say, do prediction markets work? And then the evidence will be, well, the favourite won the last election, therefore they work. And I think that's actually the wrong question. The right question has got to be a comparative question. Do they work better than some alternative institution? And the evidence so far, there's not a single head-to-head case where we have a well-defined prediction market and an alternative information aggregation, whether it's a survey or a meeting or something, or using experts, where the markets didn't come out on top. So we've accumulated a lot of evidence on political predictions. They do a better job than polls. That's not very difficult. Polls are actually a terrible way of forecasting elections. They do a better job than political experts. Within corporations, we've got some evidence that they do a better job than many of the internal corporate planning mechanisms firms sometimes use. In the economic domain, I did some work a couple of years ago with Rafet Kakaknik, in which we looked at trying to predict economic indicators. One, the usual way we do that, the so-called consensus forecast, is you call 30 economists on a Friday afternoon, you ask them what they think is going to happen next week, and you take the average. The alternative is would be to have a whole bunch of economists in a room trading real money on the likely outcome. And it turned out that the prediction market there, it's a market called the Market for Economic Derivatives, did a better job in forecasting future economic releases than the alternative we'd used for so long.
We talk a lot about market design in economics these days. Yeah. I mean, what are the key features that you need to think about when you're designing a prediction market? What helps them to work most effectively, do you think?
That's a good question. I think we're learning a lot as we go. There are lots of different types of market designs people have used. Parimutuel, often used in sports contexts, so the tote at horse racing is a parimutuel design. The good thing about a parimutuel is that it gets all the money in the same pool at the same time. Far more common is the continuous double auction we see on the New York Stock Exchange or the Iowa Electronic Market. The difficulty is that this is not the New York Stock Exchange, and often we're betting about things that very few people care about. If you don't have enough liquidity, people won't trade. I think one of the lessons we're learning is it's very difficult to get... It's very easy to find things that we want to know more about. And so it's very easy then to say, well, we should run a market on that. Turns out a lot of the time you run a market, people don't want to trade. And so you need to find a reason or a way to get people to trade. And so paradoxically then, one of the most important things to get a prediction market to succeed is to get enough stupid people in the market. And I say that because stupid people, they're the honey that draws the bees. They're the ones that are going to lose money that make it worth you and I spending our time trading in the market. And so often people have this view, it's very important that markets only be populated by very sophisticated people. But the only way to get sophisticated people is to get the unsophisticated ones in there as well.
So now you mentioned, you know, trading and things that people care about, and obviously people care about the results of elections, and within a firm they'll care about you know, how the firm succeeds, what new products it brings to market. What about some of the really big issues that we face as a global society? You know, things like terrorism, climate change. Are markets happening in these kind of areas?
Yeah. So with terrorism, there was an abortive attempt in the US to start a prediction market, not on terrorism, but actually on sort of geopolitical risk factors, things like oil prices or GDP in particular, Middle Eastern states, the success or failure of particular governments. That ultimately got killed in something of a political furor, which I think has set back US public policy interest in these questions a fair way. No one wants to be the centre of a political storm again. A different set of prediction markets. This conference tomorrow, we're going to see a paper from the folks from Iowa who are running markets on the spread of the flu in the state of Iowa, and actually also on the spread of bird flu. Their view is, if you think about who has the most information about the spread of the flu, it's doctors in doctors' offices dispersed all across the state. If you can get those people to start trading with each other, we can aggregate that information very quickly and very efficiently and potentially cut off some public health problems. So I think that has been a very promising direction for markets to evolve in. And in some sense, a lot of the challenge is in finding the next policy issues that we can help direct markets towards. I know I would love to see the Bank of England or the ECB or the US Fed adopt prediction markets internally. There's economists within those organisations. They have different models, they have different forecasts, different information, and information needs to be aggregated. At the moment, they use a technology to do that. The technology is called a meeting. And what happens? Well, too often, the guy who speaks after his boss, instead of revealing his information, just agrees with his boss because that's politically expedient, or information cascades start. Well, the information resides with someone who's naturally shy, and the information doesn't get aggregated. And so I think if one of those institutions were to start prediction markets, and I'm somewhat hopeful one will, that could be a wonderful demonstration for other public policy institutions as well.
But presumably there's a fear amongst the leaders of these organisations about creating markets in this way, and it sounds in some ways analogous to what you were saying about trying to create a market in terrorism events, that people just worry that it's not right to approach these issues in this way. I mean, presumably there's some kind of repugnance about creating a market in things that people feel, well, do we really want to give these people effectively a voice by trading their money?
Absolutely. And repugnance is the right word, and so one needs to be very careful in how one frames the issue. You may find it repugnant if I were to offer you a bet on whether I would die in the next week. It turns out that bet is already offered. We call it life insurance. And so I think framing really helps. One of the reasons that I'm quite optimistic about going to places like the Fed or the Bank of England and suggesting this is trading and markets and information aggregation are part of our lifeblood as economists. And if you think about, in particular, you know, as an Australian myself, gambling is not regarded as repugnant. The same would be true of many of my British friends as well. So I think there's cultural factors. But it is true to say that one needs a lot of buy-in from the peak level of an organisation before it's going to be willing to adopt prediction markets. And you look at where they've been adopted in the private sector, they've been adopted either in very technologically forward organisations like Google or Microsoft, or in organisations where the forecast is absolutely the heart of the organisation, with a biotech company trying to decide which compounds to develop. It's about the most important thing that happens in the organisation, and not surprisingly, they're starting to adopt prediction markets.
Final question, Justin. Let's go back to the beginning. The American election. That's the kind of that's the area, as you were suggesting, this where this started perhaps many decades ago. And you're going to be writing about the upcoming election over the course of this year for the Wall Street Journal. Tell me a little about how you're approaching this.
Well, I think it'll be fun. I think this is a really unique opportunity to educate the broader public about a large part of my research agenda. If you believe that markets do a good job at aggregating information, then you believe the single best way of tracking the race will be through the lens of markets. And so, for instance, whenever there's an election event, every side claims that it was good for them. Well, actually, whose stock rose and whose fell? Before the debate, it's an amazing thing, before the presidential debates, both sides come out and say their candidate's going to do terribly because they want to beat expectations. Well, how do we measure expectations and whether a candidate beat expectations? And again, I think markets provide a very transparent, I think reliable way of doing that. And so I think I'm going to have a lot of fun doing something I love, which is following politics, and also getting to sort of do some public education and also learn a bit more about how these markets work.
Justin Orfus, many thanks.
Thanks, Ramesh.